Hi, welcome to the UCB Theater Podcast. I am John Frusciante.
And my name is Will Hines.
And we're going to talk about the UCB Theater. We have theaters at 307 West 26th Street in New York City. And
we have a theater in Los Angeles on Franklin Avenue. You can go see shows there. We also have a website, ucbcomedy.com. Check out videos that our performers and writers are putting up there. Those are great.
Yep. And we have our main website, ucbtheater.com.
Yeah, and you can see what shows are going up, and you can sign up for classes there.
It's a whole,
see what's happening. It's a whole world
it's
of
a cornucopia.
UCB comedy. Yep.
Yeah, a whole universe.
And so this podcast, we are going to talk about news and shows coming up at the theaters. Mm-hmm. And we also have interviews. Today we have, a little bit later in this podcast, we have an interview with Nick Ross, who's doing his one-man show, Highly Evolved Human, about his experience getting cancer.
That's right.
As a young man.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it.
And then you and I are going to just yap on about whatever.
It's going to be a whole lot of really nerdy yet fascinating lip flapping.
Right, so let's get into that part.
So this week at the theater, first of all, tonight is a great show that if you don't have reservations to or plans to see, you should drop whatever you're doing.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah, and go see Billy the Mime.
Yeah.
I've seen the show every time it comes to the theater, and I will hopefully get to see it again. Hopefully, I will take my own advice and drop whatever plans I have.
What time is the show? Is
the show is at 8 o'clock.
Okay, yeah. This show's amazing. So, you know, Billy the Mime is an established, famous comedian. He's done his performances for a while.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, if you're a comedy nerd, you know Billy the Mime.
Yeah.
Like a lot of things, I'm just an idiot about going to see things that I haven't seen before.
Right.
And he did a show, I think it was in August or July, I forget, at the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right before my improv team. So I got there not to see Billy the Mime, but mm-hmm. just early to go to my own show. He was halfway through his show, and I stopped dead in my tracks and just was riveted by his show. Compelling and hilarious. I mean, it's like a spell.
Yeah.
It was just the most amazing thing. Crowd was just going bananas at the end of that show.
He's a professionally trained mime who does very dark, hilarious mime routines. Like, some of his routines are A Night with Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. JFK is one.
JFK is one.
Assassination of JFK.
Also, Edward Kennedy at Chappaquiddick is one of the routines he does.
I saw a set list, and that... And it looked just like this list of horrible and depressing topics.
Yeah.
But he does them with such... And they are.
Yeah.
Let's not take that away. They definitely really are. But he performs with such detail that you really do just get completely wrapped up in what he's doing. And there's moments where it's hilarious and then moments where it's like terrifying. And you forget that it's just a guy on stage. It really is like amazing. I agree with you. It's a fantastic show.
Yeah. From the first time I saw it, I was blown away and I was hooked. And an interesting story about Billy the Mime and my obsession with it is that I saw the show the first time he came here and I thought it was amazing.
Right.
And I went to see it again when he was here the last time he was here.
Which was September 11th.
Yes, he did a show on September 11th.
And one of his pieces is September 11th, 2001, which he's then performing in New York City on September 11th.
And that was the one moment of where the crowd was a little unsettled.
The crowd would not go with him on
that. The crowd was not quite... I was, because I'll go anywhere with anybody.
But it was the anniversary of the actual attack in the city where the attack happened.
That's right. Yeah.
But I'm glad he did it.
It's bold.
How many opportunities do you get to like do that? I mean, that would sort of like be doing like...
One a year.
The JFK assassination like at Arlington Cemetery like on Veterans Day or something like that.
Yeah. But I went back to see him last time he was here. And a friend of mine, Lauren Hunter, who I am also on my Harold team, Scooch, with, not mine, I don't own it, our
Harold
team.
No, you own it. Yeah, no, you invested and you
bought controlling
shares.
51% shareholder,
yeah,
I guess. So that technically that is ownership. She reminded me, or didn't even remind me, told me, I didn't even know this, I had no idea, that Billy the Mime, his real name is Stephen Banks.
Okay.
And he is a comedian and performance artist who did a stage show, a one-man stage show called Home Entertainment System, or Home Entertainment Center. Home Entertainment Center is what it is. And you can see it on YouTube if you search for Home Entertainment Center. And I was obsessed with that show in college. A friend of mine had it on videotape because it was a, I think it was an HBO special or a Showtime special. And he showed it at this party. He used to have Christmas parties at his apartment every year. And he put it on, and I immediately became, in the same way that I was with Billy the Mime, just riveted to it.
Right.
And, like, would not pay attention to anything that was going on at the party. Just wanted to watch this.
Right. You
and
must have been a popular guy.
Yeah. Every time I went... Oh, yeah. I was also not really popular
or
approachable.
Great to have parties.
Nobody really wanted... It was more of like, let's get John out
John
of this
came
socially.
To my party and watched all my obscure DVDs while the rest of us made friendships.
That's pretty much the way my life has gone. It's an encapsulation of it. And every time I would go to this guy's apartment, I would make him put Home Entertainment Center on. And I had no idea when I saw Billy the Mime that I was watching the same guy.
Right.
But so I'm a big fan of Stephen Banks.
Twice
and his work.
You have independently been riveted by this guy's performance.
That's right. And the last time he was here, I brought Lauren backstage after his show with me so we could kind of like, under the guise of like, hello, I am the artistic associate of the theater, just
yes,
making
I'm
sure.
Yes, I'm here in official business, of course.
Making sure everything went well and thanks
so much
for doing your show.
That would be humiliating for both of us.
Right. And then meanwhile, I'm like panting.
But you received it, Banks.
Yeah. It was great. It was a great time for both of us. Meaning me and him. It was a great time for him. He was like, thank God this guy's talking to me.
Well, the show's going to be great, no doubt.
Yeah. Really great, very dark, very hilarious, very specific. If you like mime work, and most people don't.
I would say the amazing thing is, even if you don't like mime work.
Yeah, I would say if you don't like mime work, you should come to this show because it will change your mind about how great mimes are.
Yeah. So, and what else we have this week? There's the... Thanksgiving Parade Improv Jam Show Wednesday night. What's that called?
The Macy's Day Before Thanksgiving Day Parade.
So this is something that happens at the theater now and then on nights like near or around holidays when a lot of performers have gone home or gone to visit their families. The normally scheduled shows can't go up, so we have these jams, these kind of like thrown together groups of our veteran improvisers who are around. And I remember years ago when these started happening, I remember thinking like, oh... Well, this is just some sort of like thrown together show, and no one's going to be in New York City. So, but what's happened is a lot of people do go to these shows. This is going to be a sold out, I guarantee, crowd, wall to wall people, huge energy, and the improv community knows this. So, like, people lobby to be in these shows. Like, there's going to be a lot of like senior performers doing stuff, and the shows are great. There's the one right before Thanksgiving this week. There'll be one probably after Christmas. I don't know if those are scheduled yet. And it always happened, but it's typical around these holiday weekends for these types of shows to show up.
Yeah.
And they're like hidden gems of improv coolness, I think.
I agree with you.
Like, huge crowd, great people, awesome energy, and crazy things will happen. They're favorites of mine that I did not used to appreciate, and now I do.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I used to... I don't know. I just would dismiss it as kind of like a thrown together. It's like, oh, well, it's not the normal.
It's like
show.
A novelty thing. It's like a throwaway kind of thing.
Yeah. Not only are they good shows and good people come up, but like crowds come. Like lots of people who don't normally go to see improv will go to that show.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Maybe because there's not a lot else going on in the city, and so they're trying something new for a change, or I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's like you're right. There's not a lot of stuff. Because we, like you said, do these shows either before or right after big holidays. And I think there's not a lot going on. I'm bracing for a potentially awkward family interaction.
Yeah.
Or a potentially, like, stressful flight or something. And so, or I've just experienced that.
Right.
And I want to decompress somehow. So I want to go to a place where... I know there's going to be great comedy. I know there's going to be some really fun, high-energy, interesting show.
Yeah. Can I bring up side topic? Thanksgiving to me is the holiday that everybody dreads, but actually ends up rare. It's usually like okay to good, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that holidays either fall into the never work or kind of like always surprisingly work. And I think Thanksgiving and New Year's, always fun. Halloween, Valentine's Day, always just like an annoying obligation for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That's my theory. I want to throw it out there.
Valentine's Day and Halloween, annoying obligations.
Yeah, like, oh, there's all these things you got to do, and this is like a lot of work, and you're not always ready for it. Thanksgiving, everyone dreads, but it's like, hey, I saw everybody from home, and I saw the weird guy at the bar, and my family is crazy, but I was used to it, and you know,
but I ate a lot of turkey, and
I was
drank
there for 12 hours.
Yeah,
I was in and out. Like, I don't know, it's a good time.
I think Halloween is only becomes a dreaded holiday when you have children to account for.
Oh, right.
You know, because when you don't have children that you have to dress up and parade around and get candy for and then sift through the candy for razor blades or
whatever. Which has never happened.
Never happened.
No. In the history of America, there's never been a documented case of any candy being sabotaged. That's true.
Is that absolutely?
Yes. Somebody did a study that went through all these newspapers of the last 20 years looking for any report of that happening. It's never happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's just
something we're all scared of.
Sure. And it is potentially terrifying.
Well, I mean, people are jerks.
Yeah.
Well, I've gotten off topic here.
But that's okay.
I think the charm of these holidays at work spills over to improv shows. And like the Thanksgiving, the Christmas show, mm-hmm. and the shows around New Year's are all just like awesome parties.
Yeah. And there is going to be a good mix of veterans and, you know, kind of newcomers to Harold Knight. A good mix of people who have been around for a while and people who have not been around for as long.
These young puppies.
Yeah.
They bring on the energy.
It's a, let's see. It's a 19-person cast, looks like.
Yeah, two sets, though. So
yeah,
it'd be
yeah,
like
two
not,
sets.
It'd be like
and the premise of the show is that it takes place the day before the Thanksgiving Day parade.
Right.
And it should you're going to see two improv sets that have something to do with the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Day parade.
Right.
Yeah, and it's going to be really exciting. And that is the day before Thanksgiving, which is the 25th. The show takes place Wednesday the 25th at 9:30.
Well, that's going to be good.
I am not in it, and you are not in it.
I'm not in it either because I did not get off my butt to lobby to be in it.
That's right, and neither did I. I was like,
let's
let somebody else do it. Yeah, yeah, let's set ourselves up to fail. great. And so what else is going on?
Well, the last thing I want to mention, which we mentioned in the last podcast, is the 3-on-3 tournament is finishing up. This Saturday, the Saturday after Thanksgiving, are the finals. I think the way it works is at 8 o'clock is the semifinals. 8 o'clock and like 10 o'clock are the semifinals, and then at 11:30 or midnight. I should, you know, it'd be so easy for me to prepare, even for the 20
you seconds. We have eight computers in this room right now. You have a computer right next to you. You could just look it up on. But the semifinals are at 8 and 9:30 on Saturday. And then
the finals are at 11. All those shows are going to be great.
They're going to be amazing. Packed, huge energy.
Huge crowd.
Lots of frothing at the mouth.
Again, like a mixture of veterans and rookies. And
yeah.
Three people improv sets is just the best. Like there's enough people to like, when somebody's out of ideas, there's somebody who's sort of in reserve to come in and make a move.
Yeah.
But there's enough time for people to really strut their stuff. Every finals, I've seen someone that I have not appreciated before just be awesome. I first saw Amber Petty, Trisha McAlpin, Jessica Shupak.
Penny
tore through the 3-on-3 tournament the year they did.
That's right.
And I don't think I knew any of them. I don't think so. And they were just great. Every set they did, I was like, who are they? This is like an amazing team. Oh, Ruru, Death by Ruru, was born in the 3-on-3 tournament.
Yeah.
And we all knew them as individuals, but they were just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that someone this year is going to break out and be incredible. So I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. I should be able to make it for that.
Just get there, you know. Just get your act
you
together.
No, I mean, I've got so many things.
I don't believe you. You're going to be home like looking at VHS tapes of like television parts or some like old comedy show that nobody cares about. It'll still be there. You can come and watch this show.
No, I've got so many '90s albums to re-listen to.
Is it New Miserable Experience with the Gin Blossoms?
Yes, that's
because
right.
Then
I support your decision.
Well, that's a great album. And if you're going to do it, that's an acceptable excuse.
Well, thank you.
Other album is worth it.
None? No other album?
Nope.
Just New Miserable Experience by the Gin Blossoms?
Well, it's underrated.
It is. It is a very underrated album. We are going to catapult ourselves off topic.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I keep doing that. So,
no, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, so okay. It's cool. We're in the pre-Thanksgiving week, so we got a lot of random and cool stuff happening.
Yep, we are stuffing the comedy turkey.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
Right?
No, I can't help you.
Oh, man, that's a home run.
Wow.
Oh, come on.
You're at a hip comedy theater. Your attraction for puns is weird.
Oh, no, my attraction for puns is perfect. You've got to balance it out.
I guess.
My puns are the little white dot within the black half of the yin-yang.
I guess. I don't know.
All right, so we will be right back with an interview with Nick Ross from Highly Evolved Humans. Stick around. Okay, welcome back to the UCB Theater Podcast. We have in the studio now Mr. Nick Ross. Hey, Nick, how's it going?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you?
Great.
Thanks for coming on the podcast, Nicholas.
Oh, my pleasure, William.
Do you prefer Nicholas or Nick?
I go by Nick, but my mother can choose either way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it goes.
So you're here to promote a show. You have a great show that's going up on Friday.
Yeah, this Black Friday. The day after Thanksgiving, I have a show at 8 p.m. called Highly Evolved Human. It's a new show that just recently got a run at UCB Theater after a really fun national tour that I took it on.
This is first of all, it's a great show. Second of all, it's
you,
a really personal show for you, right?
The most personal. It's the most personal thing I've ever done.
Because it's about, tell us about the show.
Well, the show, it's called Highly Evolved Human, and it's all about my experiences when I was going through cancer treatment. I went through cancer treatment a couple years ago, and it's sort of a show about how silly it is living in that viewpoint.
We didn't want to be the first ones to say cancer.
I know, you guys are like,
we were just trying to like,
it's the elephant in the room.
Prompt
like,
you.
I'm afraid that if I say it, you'll get it again.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how it works, right? My very limited medical knowledge.
Yeah, don't be a doctor.
Yeah, well, I say it a lot.
Well, it's a scary thing. I heard about your show, and I heard when you got sick, which was like, it was terrifying. It was to us, me, self-centered. Mm-hmm. It was like out of nowhere. It's like, where's Nick? He hasn't been around. He's like, oh, he has cancer. He went back in Colorado. I was like, what? That can't happen. We're not real. We're doing ridiculous things all the time.
I mean, when you were diagnosed with it, with cancer, you and I were on a Harold team together.
Yeah, we were on the same Harold team.
We were on trucks together. Great Harold team, right, Will?
Yes.
Your favorite, right?
Well, let's not go crazy. There's been a lot of Harold teams. I'm at least going to put the ones I was on ahead of those.
Well, I mean, that's a weird kind of narrow-minded approach to it. But
nope. At least it's up and above board. Hey, you guys were on the same team.
Yeah, we were on trucks together, and you know, you talk about in Highly Evolved Human about the way your friends kind of react to it and the difficulty that everybody has in dealing with somebody.
Yeah, there's
of
a big segment on just being really young and being kind of single, kind of living a carefree life in New York City and having to tell people that you have cancer and how awkward it is because people don't really have the vocabulary or the wherewithal to sort of approach that with.
If you walked up and you said like, oh, I can't afford rent, mm-hmm. or I'm having this romantic problem or this career insecurity even,
right.
People be ready to just yap right along.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you coming up and saying you have cancer is sort of like walking up to somebody in their mid-20s and being like, oh, I got Alzheimer's. It's like
there's no vapid conversation filler that I can banter back and forth with about that. Like,
plus
you're talking about rent or love or anything like that.
Or,
like,
you know, got some stories for you.
Yeah. Or if it's amongst our friends, most likely it's bitching about, like, how District 9 isn't what the trailer said it would be. Or some, like, completely inane topic. And then it's like, oh, by the way, my life has been transformed by this scary thing.
Yeah, and I remember, the reason I bring that up is I remember hearing about it. I remember you were kind of talking about like how you might be sick and you were going to the doctors and things, and then when the diagnosis came back, I was like, I do not have the social skill set to deal with this. So I identify
You're
with
not
that part
alone.
Of your show.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh my God, is my friend going to die? Like, what's going to happen here? You know, I have no idea. I'm not prepared for this.
Yeah. What an inconvenience you're giving to us, Nick.
Yeah. Come on.
You're putting us in a terrible place.
I feel
place.
Really bad that you guys had to deal with this. I should have been like just working I should have been working freelance. Like, not really having to deal with much.
Right.
But so, I mean, what is that like? What was it like for you? You deal with it to a certain degree in your show, but like what, you know, what is that like?
Well, I think the diagnosis affected me in the same way that it affects people around me. I feel like I was just like, you know, like that. No, that's not what I have.
Yeah,
that's an old people's thing.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's something that doesn't sink in until you're like in a chemo chair and like, you know, like seeing these chemicals going into your chest and like. Seeing your parents crying and, you know, like all these different, sorry to bring this down a minute, but like, that's kind of like when it became real to me was once I started going through all these procedures and having all these things happen to me and seeing the fear that was in like the eyes of all the people that I care about and being like, oh my goodness.
A terrifying thing. Like just how out of your hands it is to some degree. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, we're trying this and yeah, the chances are X that it'll work, and we've seen these. But on the other hand, we don't ultimately know how to control this.
Yeah,
it's like that's the hard reality of it. Is it's like we're giving this our best shot.
Yeah. But now it's a hilarious show.
Yeah, I mean, you got that out of it, you know. Yeah. Mm. And the title "Highly Evolved Human" comes from a comment that somebody had made to you after you had gone through, or while you were going through chemo.
Yeah,
right?
It's actually, I will give that title to John Gabris. We were video chatting while I was in treatment, and I had no hair. And he was like, dude, you look like a highly evolved species. Yeah. And I was like,
you
I don't remember.
Look like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember thinking, I was like, highly evolved human, and it just stuck. And then it really didn't have any bearing on the nature of the show. I was just like, I need a title, and it sort of hit. And it was like, the show is all about sort of like, the culture of cancer kind of evolving into a little bit more of an, like, with ease, like, into our social interaction, like, the way that it was really jarring to hear about. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes
yes.
a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, yeah.
And I will say this. Like, go ahead.
How that sentiment, like, could evolve into something that we all know how to deal with.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, that's the way your title resonates to me, because in a sense you kind of are a highly evolved human now, because you've kind of evolved through this experience that, like, not many people, I mean, too many people, but, you know, not a whole lot of people get to go through. That makes sense?
Yeah.
You both make a lot of sense.
Will
Here's
is the referee.
My question for Nick is, so before this run at the UCB, you took this on a tour, right?
Yeah.
You did this, like, around the country?
Yeah.
That fascinates me because, first of all, I don't leave New York ever.
Yeah.
I really don't. And I don't do anything of any enterprising nature, nor do I engage in any kind of confrontation for the betterment of my career.
And yet you had to do. You're a static human being.
Yeah. And yet you did all these things to bring your show on the road. So what were the logistics of this? How did that come to be?
It came to be. Well, I did one Spank months ago, and somebody from the American Cancer Society that was putting on a benefit at Southpaw in Brooklyn came, and he invited me to do my whole show as the sort of headlining act of that event. And then I did that event, and Fox News covered that event. And then through that event, I was connected to Newsweek. And Newsweek did an article, which I was sort of cited in as someone who was bringing cancer to the forefront in this new culture of, like, sort of being very open with cancer. Cancer is sort of historically a secret.
Right.
And now there's, like, this big sort of cultural shift in making it, like very public and, like, blogging about your experiences and doing right. shows about them and making art about it. And so I was sort of, and it was a tie into the movie Funny People, which had, like, a cancer theme.
Right, right.
Oh, that's right.
And so Newsweek was coming out, and they interviewed me about that article, and then they brought a camera crew to the show. It was like another Spank at the theater, and they brought a camera crew, and then they did this big national feature on my show.
Right.
And then I started getting emails from around the nation that were like, we would love for you to come.
Oh, wow.
Do
I had no
show.
Idea. So this sort of just, and not that it was easy, but, like, oh, these opportunities came up
right.
that, to put the idea
and,
in your head.
My buddy Graham, who I co-wrote the show with, had just bought a Prius because he was moving to L.A. and he was going to drive across country. And so we decided to try to kill two birds with one stone. And I was already in the Out of Bounds Comedy Festival in Austin. And so we basically took all that information where we were like, and we booked shows in Athens, Georgia, New Orleans, Austin, Denver, Salt Lake, and L.A. and did
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, when you're amazing. Picking a city, is it just like this city, like Austin, has a reputation for being hip and there's an improv culture there and there's a good comedy scene? Is it just sort of like where you try to pick likely markets? Or is it like, I got a friend there who will let us crash. He'll tell me what place I might want to call and get a show.
I think it was a little of A and a little of B. I think it was also the route we wanted to go to the South. I had never been to the South and Graham had never been to the South. So we wanted to, like, be able to drive through that. It was very, I mean, I say this. In hindsight, like, we had, like, this huge plan, but it's very like, yeah, we could do that. Yeah, okay, we could do that. You know, like, it was very like,
yeah.
okay,
yeah,
that's
kind of
fine.
Spur of the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What has the response been from to your show from cancer survivors or relatives or family or friends?
Well, it's cool because I feel like the dynamic before seeing the show is very hesitant and very scared, and then after the show is very, like, warm and appreciative because it's not a show making fun of cancer, and I think that's what people go in thinking it is. People are like, oh, I'm
going
to go see...
That would be a tough sell.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. People are like, they see the ad for, or they see the UCB write-up, and they're like, oh, it's a show about cancer. I bet with UCB's reputation of being, like, this hard-hitting, searing comedy place, that we're going to see the show that really, like, has a lot of, like, inappropriate cancer jokes, but it's not, like...
Do we have that reputation of a
no, like, yes, that, like, I've been telling people that...
Oh, you tell people that we make fun of
theater
right?
shows. Yeah, based on whatever is in the title gets mocked heavily.
Oh, okay. Well, it's yeah. your fault. All yep. right, go ahead.
But it's not about that. It's there. It, literally, the whole show is about my experience with it, and it's not about what I hate about cancer or what's wrong with cancer. It's just about, like... how I felt going through this condition for like a year.
Well, I think it's like something you said before. It's one of these topics, cancer, sickness of any kind, that you're just, your instinct is to not talk about it. That it's,
yeah,
that it's rude or imposing to ask people who are dealing with it how they're dealing with it. And that's, it's not. It just, you feel like, oh, I don't want to be the one to bring that up in this conversation.
Yeah.
And then that permeates just to this tendency to hide it like a secret. And then it, but when you do talk about it, it's not such a complicated thing. We all have our opinions on it. And there's a relief of having it out there.
Right.
So I imagine your show has that effect where it's like, ah, oh, we did it.
Yeah.
We all talked about it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, we're, this is, that was, yes, we're normal.
Yeah.
You, like, encourage people to give themselves on the spot, checks for cancer.
Yes, that is the beginning of the show. Is we all get together and we do a little cancer check together.
Yeah.
It's something that we should all do.
Yeah. I have a question for you about this show relating to the process of this show. So you did, you mentioned this before, you did two spanks on the show, right?
Yeah. Well, I did a workout a long time ago where I literally just stood on stage with a microphone and just talked about some ideas, and I told like one of the stories that ended up being in Highly Evolved Human and just some other stuff that was just now kind of garbage. But I did that workout, and then I got up the courage to do a spank with just sort of like disparate ideas separated with like musical interludes that didn't really have like the through line yet. And then I did another spank that really connected all the ideas under one umbrella of the viewpoint of like, this is a hard, this is an uncomfortable situation to go through.
So for you, is it, was it like a frustrating experience to have to do several spanks of the show, or was it like, I believe in this, so I'm willing to kind of go along with this journey? Like, artistically, what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, well, I think because the show had so much activity outside of the UCB spank system, I was pretty happy. I was pretty happy about it. I mean, it's the one thing I get frustrated with is doing shows at 6, but that's okay. You know, it's like, that's a tough sell for your friends to be like, come at 6.
Sure.
Although people with normal jobs probably appreciate it better. I feel like I have shows that are like at 11 or at midnight, and I can't get anybody who's not already committed to this thing of ours to come see the show. Like, you know, I think I was doing comedy for 6 years before I had a show I could even think about inviting my father to, because it was before 10 o'clock at night.
So is it a thing of that you... I think the
benefit is far greater in working on a show and like actually, I don't know, working on it with like goals in mind, being like, I have a month to really raise the bar on the show and challenge myself as a writer, challenge like the whole creative team. There's 2 directors of the show, 2 writers, another actor who embodies cancer.
Oh yeah, that's right. Leslie Mizell.
Yeah, Leslie Mizell.
Mizell is awesome.
Yeah, she's amazing, and she's a great addition to the show.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
She's also the co-director along with Nate Smith.
Yes, her and Nate were the first directors.
Co-director, and she got on stage somehow, huh?
She wormed her way into it.
Snake.
Well,
Leslie Mizell.
Yep,
boy.
She is a wily one.
Oh, boy, oh boy.
I really value the spank system and how like it you know, because I feel like each one is kind of an audition, and I've never had a show. This is the second show that I've run, and I've never had less than 3 spanks, I think, in my whole life. So I kind of expect it at this point.
Yeah, the reason that I ask that is, you know, I see most of the spanks, and we see a lot of shows that come through that we will give notes to, and most of them, they come through, they're not ready. Because, like with anything, you're never going to be ready on your first shot. And then we give them notes, and then we never see them again. And that always bewilders me and frustrates me. Like, what are you expecting to get out of this process? Are you expecting us to just say, like, yep, it's great. Your little creation is beautiful. Put it up on stage. No, with any creative process that you... Oh, you're expecting that, Will?
Yeah, I thought that's what happened.
No, that's not what's going to happen.
Boy, oh boy.
With anything, you need to develop it. You know, you need to, like, get notes from somebody in any situation, whether it's stage or TV or anything like that. And then improve it and bring it back.
Well, you need that balance, I think, of arrogance and humility, right? You gotta be like a team player enough in anything you do for anybody to be able to like hear somebody's feedback, consider it. But you also need the self-confidence to persevere.
Yeah.
You gotta be like Nick and Graham were like, well, we'll figure out how to book a national tour on our way or whatever. Like, that's a combination of like hubris, but also they got it done. Like they had the pragmatic skills to actually get that happening.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it. You have to be able to, you have to be confident in your idea enough.
So that when somebody
gives
you notes, it doesn't just crumble into burned newspaper.
And you also have humility so that you're not like, oh, well, they don't like it. Well, they don't like my perfect show. Well, I'll find some other theater that does like it.
Yeah.
That likes it as is without me having to change a word, which you're never going to find.
And I think it's funny. And going back to me, I think it's funny how on this show specifically, it's a lot of very personal stories. Like there's a story of where I like went to bank sperm before going through chemotherapy. There's a story of like being on a bus and having some guy ask if I was losing my hair and that's why I shaved my head. And there's all these like stories. And that was what was nerve wracking about hearing notes on the show. I was like, I wonder if my stories just don't cut it as stories. Because the theater also has like a big reputation of being like awesome storytelling theater.
Right. Your life is not interesting.
it's like you know that tragic experience you shared?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not funny enough.
Yeah. Could you organically have more funny things happen to you? Could you improve the quality of interaction with the world that you have?
Maybe just getting cancer wasn't enough for you.
Yeah. Could you spice it up?
That's some drama.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you did see it through, and I'm glad that you did challenge yourself. I think you have a great attitude about it. That's great that's a great attitude to have about it, is we need to challenge ourselves to improve the show. And I'm glad that you did, because the result is a great show.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. When's Wilder doing shows again?
I think
where is everybody in Wilder right now?
Everybody moved to LA. And Jill's moving next.
Good heavens.
That's right. Jill's moving next month, right?
And Wilder is you, Jill, it's Graham.
Jill, Graham, Amy Flanagan, and I. And Kabir Hamid was, but he's been in LA for a couple years now.
Right.
But I think Jill, Amy, and I are all going to be doing a show at Under St. Mark's on.
Be on the lookout for Wilder, everybody. It's a great improv group.
Yeah.
You will love it.
3/5 Wilder is going to be in town on December 4th, I believe.
That's Quorum.
You're also back in the Herald system now, right? You are on...
Back in the Herald.
You're on People.
People,
right?
People.
Correct. Yes.
Formerly
the Scam.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's that?
It's fascinating. It's such an awesome experience to be the youngest member of a team.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, People is the old team.
Yeah.
I'm coaching it.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, because I want people I can talk about MASH with.
There's a lot of vets, a lot of like heavy hitter vets.
Yeah,
former,
people that
ex-mother. If we want to talk about
Jesse
them, like a punk
Tara,
band, we would
Doug
say ex-mother.
Doug Moe, Tara Copeland, Jesse Falconer on that team.
Yeah, a lot of the people that I, when I was coming up through classes, were like, whoa, those people are incredible. I'll never be as good as them.
Yeah.
And I'm still not.
Well, they're not as great as Trucks, but they're a pretty good team.
Dude, can we just lay off of Trucks?
Well,
jeez.
You know what?
This
has
been
the
like 150,000.
Take off that
teams.
Trucks shirt.
I can't, man. It's glued to my body. Underneath this shirt is just a tattoo that looks like a shirt. Well, I'm satisfied. My curiosity is satisfied. How
yes,
about you,
I'm excited.
Will?
I think we should go see the show.
Friday, November 27th at 8 p.m. You're paired with Ryan Carles. Don't honk at me.
Yeah, who can I tell a funny story about Ryan Carles?
Of course
yes.
You can.
Before this does not appear in my cancer show at all. But exactly one year before I got diagnosed, I appeared in an Onion News Network video with Ryan Carles, where I played a cancer patient and Ryan played my brother who was comforting me.
Yeah.
And it was exactly a year before I got diagnosed. I had to shave my head for it. I had a big fro. Delaney wrote the sketch and he asked me to be in it and I was like, yeah, I'll shave my head.
Yeah. That's why when your head was shaved from having chemo, I was not thrown. I was like,
everybody was
his
like,
head.
Everybody was like,
that's
done that before. but yeah, that's, it's cool that I get to be paired with him.
Right. So in that video, you were playing a cancer victim.
He was
playing a bicyclist, rugged outdoors type. And now you're going to do your show about actually having
3 years later
had cancer, and he's doing a show about riding a bike and being a rugged
outdoors. Yeah,
yeah,
wow.
So beware of what you do in real life, because you will someday be doing a show about.
Yep, it's going to come back to haunt you. Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Nick. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, guys.
See Nick's show. All right, and we will be right back with more of the UCB Theater Podcast. Stick around.
So I wanted to talk briefly about classes, what's going on with classes over the next month. I helped to run the school in New York, me along with Eric Tenoy and Shannon Coffey. We administer the classes. So the thing about classes toward the end of the year is we don't want to start any classes that will then be interrupted by the Christmas New Year's break. So things start to wind down. So what we're doing is we're trying to use a lot of the empty spaces and have one-day workshops, two-week workshops, and four-week workshops run by senior teachers who sort of like have a specialty that they want to work on that maybe isn't enough for a full class. Mm-hmm. And we're getting a lot of these like one-day workshops. And I think they're working out great. They're not a big time or money commitment from people. And the teachers are interested in doing these particular topics, like specialties that they either want to do or that I'm asking them to do. Like Gavin Spieler is doing one on group games. Charlie Todd is doing one on third beats and connections in there. I'm doing one on getting premises directly from an opening more aggressively. Anthony King is doing one on what does it mean to truly yes and something, sort of a simplified, enlightened way to really be aware. Am I yes anding this in a helpful way? Mm-hmm. I asked Zach Woods to do one on game. Curtis is doing one on how to play absurd situations with a realistic air, something he would definitely know
sure.
a lot about. So these one-day things, I think they're popular. What little feedback I've gotten has been positive. I like scheduling them. I'm going to try to keep them going next year.
Yeah, they all sound great. They all sound like really
Yeah, nice specific
awesome.
Hook.
Yeah, stuff
and
that people want.
Yeah, and
from
that,
people who know how to give it to them, and from people that students are excited, students and performers, anybody
yeah,
would be excited.
If you know the UCB scene and you know these performers, these names would not be surprises for doing the topics that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like that idea. And because our regular classes, obviously I'm biased, I like them very much, but they're regimented. There's a curriculum and there's like specific things. You only have so much time.
Sure.
I'm trying to let teachers who have a little bit more to say about topics get a chance to do it. Plus, as you and I know, as people who've taken a million classes back in the day, like,
right.
You never know, like, which class is going to be the one where you have your breakthrough. Like,
yeah.
You're really just looking for those moments of success where you feel like yourself, you feel like the funny person you know that you can be. It's just you can get it into your muscle memory to feel that success. And you never know what combination of classmates and teachers are going to produce that for you.
Yeah, and what combination of, or what particular language or delivery of the message is going
right.
to be the thing that is like, oh, I get this.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating to me, like to me as a student and performer of improvisation and also as a teacher and watching, as a teacher and coach and watching people, like it's fascinating to see what gets to people, you know?
Yeah, because everyone essentially is saying the same thing
yeah.
in some way. Every philosophy of comedy, really, mm-hmm. and improv and stuff, but it's just like certain mantras, certain vocabularies ring true.
Yeah.
Like the genius of Del Close was finding these keystones or principles that were simple, easily communicated, and worked. Like they demonstrably improved the improv that was being done.
Yeah.
And so to a lesser degree, we all have our like way of putting things that can shine a light.
Yeah.
So yeah, like certain classes I would just feel like a jerk. I'd be like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm in my head. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, you
know?
I'm the worst person in this class.
Yeah, why
Clearly,
did I do this?
I will never make it.
Once again, I've made a terrible life choice. I'm wasting everybody's time.
I still have that.
Oh, yeah.
I still go through
I constantly
those. Even
go through
in practices and in shows, you still, I think everybody does. I think
you only ever feel as good as your last show. It doesn't matter. You can do great shows for years, and then you have a lousy show, and you feel terrible.
Yeah. And then you can have a great show and feel like, well, I am amazing at
yep,
this.
Yep, got
and,
it.
Yeah.
Figured out.
And also, why are more people not recognizing
why
my
are
talent?
These other people not stepping up
yeah.
to see how great I'm doing?
Yeah, yeah. And also to, like, why do I have to be surrounded with these people that are clearly lesser talent
I
than
should
I
be
am?
In a better place.
Yeah.
These are idiots and gnats.
I'm going to go open my own theater.
That's what I'm doing. Out of my way, worms! I got this, and then like 10 minutes of a bad show, and you're like, oh, I don't even deserve friends.
Yeah.
People
yeah,
shouldn't
yeah.
even be nice to me.
Clearly somebody is coming for me after the show
yeah.
to tell me that I am relieved of any kind of performance responsibility
yeah.
in this environment.
A lot of times when I'm teaching a class, I'm sure that students of mine who would be hearing this would laugh. This doesn't, I'm sure I don't actually do this. But my intent a lot of times is I'm just trying to get people to success.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you just experience a good scene on stage, that does more, I think, than a lot of analysis after the fact. Like a lot of students want individual notes. And there's an insatiable demand for individual notes. And be harder on us. Or be harder on these other people. They need someone to tell them the truth. And I get that. And to
right.
some degree, that's true. But it doesn't. I don't see that ultimately making people better, you know? Like,
yeah.
what makes people better is to, I mean, winning begets winning. Be in a good scene. Like, we try to design exercises that just make you know what it feels like to do a funny scene. I feel like having that in your muscle memory is what's going to make you better later.
Yeah. I agree, and this is something that I've been thinking about, actually, now that you mention it. Even, like, we get, this is a very note-centric environment.
The culture of an improv is, your peers give you notes after shows, after classes.
Yeah, your peers give you notes.
You put up a written show, and you're going to get notes from you or Anthony.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me is, like, having been lucky enough to be on Harold teams for about as long as I've been at this theater.
Right.
It's always interesting to me. Sometimes I will be getting notes from our coach after a Harold, and I'll think, like, are these notes helping me?
Right.
Like, is this, like,
I was thinking when I was coaching.
I understand specifically when you were coaching us, I was thinking these are not helpful at all. this man is a fraud.
Right. Yeah, you were accurate.
But, like, is it, because I understand, you know, and I'm on both sides of it because I, you know, coach groups and teams and whatnot as well. And I think about this as for myself as well. Like, is it enough to just say, well, this scene was not successful and this is what you should have done. This is what you could have done. This is, like, what you missed.
Yeah.
Because the onus is on the performer to think, like, okay, well, how do I not miss those things? Because I think a lot of the notes that are given lean more towards, like, this is what you missed. These are the things that you have to look out for. And then I guess practice sessions are designed to kind of address those things. But it's still, like, that's the difficulty of getting and receiving notes, is how helpful are they ultimately?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you go through phases. Like, you're in sometimes you go through growth phases where those things are helpful and you're open to these challenges and you can feel it. And sometimes you go through phases where, I mean, you still you hear the notes, you consider them, but, like, sometimes you've got little individual missions that you're working on that are independent of what the group is going on or what happened in the show. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember going through phases where it was just all about courage, just, like, do not bail on stage. Like, I'd never done acting before, so just to commit to any kind of emotional choice beyond whatever I do normally was an achievement. And I would measure my success in the show to myself, just like, did I do anything brave in this show for me?
Yeah.
Even if it didn't register and people watching would not see it as brave or have no idea. Mm-hmm. Not that I would, like, argue notes, but, like, you know, maybe the notes would be something else. There'd be, like, an analytical coach that would be like, well, there was two beats, you needed a third, and this one didn't heighten the last thing. They would all be true.
Yeah.
But in my head, I'd be like, well, I'm sure this is right, but I was sad when somebody pimped me into being sad. Mm-hmm. Even though I didn't feel sad inside, and that was a miracle that nobody noticed but me. I just have to remember that I did that.
Those are the moments where you sort of set aside, like, any kind of analysis of the show in favor of, well, I'm working on this right now.
Yeah.
Because I've gone through, I feel like I'm almost always, unless it's going really well, there have been times where I've done, like, two or three Harolds in a row where I've been like, I'm on fire.
Yeah.
I'm doing it. It's really working.
Right.
Then I'm like, there's nothing I need to work on.
Yes, I'm completely good at this.
Yeah, I'm a well-rounded improviser.
Yep, I'm perfect at art.
Yeah, but then there are other times where it's like, well, I think I need to. My thing has always been breaking. I go back and forth my entire improv career. It was one of the first things that I was ever really called out on, and it's something that I've gone back and forth with my entire improv career about. I'm always either, well, I need to really work on this, or I don't care.
Right, you know, right.
I just have to accept it.
Yeah.
If I don't accept it, I'm going to drive myself crazy.
Yeah.
And so there are times when I'm like, well, I did that whole hilarious scene with John Gutierrez.
I was going to say, it definitely would be with Goots, right? Yeah.
It almost always is.
Yeah.
and I didn't break once. I held on to it. So there are times, you know, when that's happening. But you're right. Like, it is, you know,
individual. Well, the notes, I mean, even in those phases where you're not particularly open for whatever reason, what a good coach will do is be, like, a responsible audience member for you. You know, will relate to you what it looked like from the audience. Because you never know on stage what it feels like. You may feel terrible and the show maybe wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
Or you might feel great and the show overall had this kind of feeling to it that you don't appreciate. So if nothing else, the culture of giving notes is handy because there's someone who's like, this felt this way.
Sure.
This scene worked. This didn't. This is the moment where I was into it. This is the – I mean, just that's valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, if they can help you diagnose things – I mean, you remember stuff in notes. You're like, oh, yeah, that moment happened where none of us moved.
Sure.
Or whatever. Oh, yeah, there was that moment we were all talking over each other. I remember feeling that way at the time, but I've already forgotten it. Like, a good coach will at least help you burn parts of the show into your memory.
Yeah.
so they don't.
And I think that that's valuable. I think the way to make that valuable, what I always try to do is like, I do try to remember things as much as possible, because I think if you get, there's a part of your brain that I think if you get a note enough, you will start to realize when you are going towards doing those things that you got noted on in shows.
Right.
You know, or at the very least, your group conscience, you know, the group mind will kind of digest these things.
Yeah.
And kind of all agree to say, like, well, we have to go more towards this direction or go away from this direction.
It's pretty jarring when you start to hear the same note from different people. Like, that really starts to bring new truth to it.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people told me and still tell me. It's like, oh, you got to commit well. A little more commitment, maybe just a little more expression, just a little more into it. Then I started, when I went to go on auditions for commercials, the notes would always be, to me only, you, 1,000 times more. You can give us 1,000 times more than what you're doing. Everyone else should be a little smaller, a little more real, but you there in the corner, Bob Newhart, more, or whatever. And it's like, I guess this is the energy I have on stage, that it doesn't feel that way to me inside.
Yeah, and that is what's valuable about like having somebody kind of notice it and call it out. I mean, I always think like when I hear the same notes from a bunch of different people, it always amazes me like how many people are wrong about something.
That's the attitude you have about it?
I'm like,
they're all wrong?
Yeah, like none of these people are noticing how great we are. Like, what's happening here?
It is a miracle,
what
right?
are we teaching in?
Wow, a lot of people are individually missing what I did right.
I don't see myself as a common denominator in any situation.
So these workshops, I don't know, you get a lot of different, I mean, the idea is to get a lot of viewpoints out there without huge investments of time or money. I hope that's what it is.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what it is. And I think, like, people will, the people that get in on it early will say, these are the skill sets, or this is a skill set that I want to work on. And the people that come to it later will think, well, this is the teacher that's still available that I want to take
right.
workshop with.
Well, senior teachers tend to get busier and busier. Like, Charlie Todd is, I think, a great teacher. I've always really liked his coaching and teaching, but he's busy being successful at everything he does,
right,
which is annoying. So we can't book him for 8-week classes that often.
Yeah.
But a 4-week, maybe 2-week, and a 1-day workshop, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way to milk some more out of these people while they're still around and teaching.
They continue the
LA migration and exodus.
Yeah, the great exodus to
from Chicago to New York to LA.
That's right. Just LA is a very fortunate theater right now to have some of our best people. We prepared them well.
We hope so. Or they're going to be dreading it. Or it's going to be like a bunch of know-it-all New Yorkers heading out west being like, this is the way to do it.
Yeah, you don't
Shut
understand.
Shut up. You don't know.
With those accents.
Yeah. This corner should smell like urine.
You have to up your accent to an extreme level when you go out there.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a law.
Meet expectations.
It's required. Okay, well, this has been a great, fascinating discussion about workshops and notes and what have you.
So that's our podcast. So go see Nick Ross's show.
Mm-hmm. When are those workshops going to be up?
Every Wednesday night.
Okay.
Well, they're all sold out now. All the new classes always go up Wednesday night, sometime around like 7 o'clock. And so we try to put some up every Wednesday. We put up a million new classes for January on November 11th, so we're a couple weeks have been kind of a lull.
So these workshops that we talked about are already sold out? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the first batch are. But we'll put more up probably on the 25th, this Wednesday night at 7. We'll put a couple up. And then each Wednesday throughout December, I bet you we'll add like one or two or three more. So I'll just check every Wednesday at 7.
Great.
Oh, and if you check the message boards, boards.ucbcomedy.com, it's our new message boards.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to try to put like advance notice, like basically – There's a training center thread, and we're going to try to put in there, oh, we expect this Wednesday to be putting these up.
Oh, okay.
Not a guarantee, because you never know with teacher schedules.
Right. So if I'm Johnny Milkshakes,
but if you're Johnny Milkshake and you really want to get these workshops, you should check boards.ucbcomedy.com training center threads to see that you and your brother, the Milkshake brothers, want to take certain workshops, that you can get a jump on it there. We're trying to get more communicative about that.
Great. Yeah. Thank you, Will.
You're welcome, John.
This has been a wonderful podcast, I think. We're really doing it.
Me too. I really liked it.
Yeah. Okay, so that concludes the UCB Theater Podcast. Check us out on Twitter at UCB Theater NY. Join our Facebook fan page, UCB Theater New York, UCBcomedy.com, UCBtheater.com. WillHines.net.
what's your Tumblr?
BreakUpYourBand.tumblr.com.
If you want, that's the real goal of this podcast, is to get your Tumblr account.
Yeah, if you want just ridiculous commentary about 90s music.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.